Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important, fastest growing, and now largest segment of society. To those who have finally come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, academic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they're untrustworthy, that they're in fact counterproductive, and that they can no longer be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is toll free, 877-300-7645. The violence continues at Ferguson. The scenes out of Ferguson remind me of what transpired in the Boston area following the marathon bombing by two Muslim brothers. It's become a police state. Protests in the St. Louis suburb. Now, this says, rocked by racial unrest. I don't see it as racial. Yeah, I understand that Ferguson is approximately two-thirds African-American, and that the police force is 95% Caucasian. I understand that. And I understand that the likelihood is, although we do not know for certain, that the cop who killed the young black man was a white cop. Certainly likely based upon I think it's 55 police officers, somewhere in that range, only three of which are black. But this is actually a much bigger story. And we're going to talk more about this story this morning. As last night, it turned into a war zone. You had mostly very peaceful protesters of all colors, all races, demonstrating against the police. Now, it's true that a few threw Molotov cocktails, but that was pretty much the extent of their misbehavior, if you wish to say. And the police hurled canister after canister after canister of tear gas. It looked like the mob scenes in Cairo, when people were protesting first the Mubarak regime, then were protesting the Morsi Muslim Brotherhood regime, and then were protesting the Sisi military regime. If you haven't seen the pictures, you ought to look at them and check out the difference between the citizens of Ferguson and the police. The police are extraordinarily heavily armed. They're sitting atop and inside of armored personnel carriers. They can be seen holding heavy weapons, 50 caliber machine guns. And they are facing off against one another. It is the very thing which we have been warning our listeners about for years now, that America is becoming a police state, that America's police are deployed with very heavy weaponry. They're wearing military-style helmets. They're in flak jackets. They are carrying very powerful weapons, way more powerful weapons than should ever be deployed in a civilian context. And it's frightening. Ferguson Police Chief Thomas Jackson, who is a huge part of the problem, who has been the public face of the city torn by Saturday's death of an 18-year-old Michael Brown, his department, he and his department, everybody should be fired, top to bottom, told reporters early in the day that St. Louis County investigation of the shooting could take weeks to complete. Bull. There are only three witnesses. You know, this police department didn't want to have the surveillance cameras because the surveillance cameras are routinely showing that when police claim that the perpetrator, which they consider the perpetrator to have been the cause of their response, doesn't show that. And so when there is video, it almost always goes against the cop for being belligerent. And so he doesn't want to tell anybody anything. And this is not a weeks-long investigation. Crime scene is really simple. There are only three witnesses, the cop, the buddy, and a nearby witness who corroborates the buddy's testimony. He said, unfortunately, an undertow of racial unrest has bubbled to the surface. Race relations are now the top priority. No. That's not the top priority. The top priority is the militant, aggressive nature of America's police force, of its federal agents, of its local cops, and, of course, of its military, often indistinguishable.
Yeah, I would say that if you try and turn it into a race issue, you're really doing a lot of injustice to the actual situation that's taking place. I know just as many white people, myself included, that think this is absurd. This is ridiculous. This cop has to be brought in. We need to find out who this is. We need to know what happened. Not only is there the one witness that was with him, his friend that was with him, but there's two other women that have come out and said that they saw it. And I mean, if you want to turn this into, if all you can do with this situation is try and turn it into a Trayvon Martin thing, one, you're being extremely disrespectful to everything I've heard about Michael Brown.
Correct.
As far as I know, he's
a good kid.
He's done everything that he's supposed to do. There's no other side to his.
He's a good kid. I want people to look at his picture and consider his past and where he was going in his life. This is a good kid.
But there's no other story here, and it's not, you know, some guy's word against a dead kid. This is something that has witnesses, and by all accounts, this is absolutely ridiculous.
You're a Caucasian dude, right?
I am a Caucasian.
Yeah, okay. I would be considered Caucasian, even though I'm Sioux Indian. But we are absolutely, completely, and totally appalled by what happened.
It's ridiculous.
And you know, and if the victim had been green, my response would have been identical. The problem here isn't racism, and we ought not try to push this aside as a racial issue. The problem is what's happened to America. It's become a police state, and the police are becoming ever more belligerent. There's way too high a percentage of former military now amongst cops. And we did something in our military that made them the worst candidates to be police. We indoctrinated within our military that anybody who was opposed to them was an animal, a savage, who deserved to die, and say they don't have respect for life. That's why when the protesters are putting up their hands, the police are yelling animals at them. We have a serious problem. You know, in our military, if you want to have verification of the tragic consequence of the indoctrination of the men and women who serve in the military, that they have been, their conscience, their morality has been destroyed. All you need to know is that there are approximately 650,000 active duty Army and Marines, and there are 650,000 U.S. Military personnel who claim to be suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome and are being medicated and psychologically evaluated and treated for it. All you need to know is that at this point, more Americans have taken their lives as vets by in the range of 30-fold that actually died in the battle. They could not live with what they were indoctrinated to believe. They could not live with the lies that they witnessed. They could not live with the utter abuse they witnessed. And so it's 80 a day who are taking their lives. Within the military, we have rampant sexual abuse and no desire to stem it. No consequence for it. Where a woman involved in the military is many, many times more likely to be abused sexually than in any other place. And yet this is the primary source of police. Largely because now they're deploying the same equipment that they used in war zone. We've created a disaster. And we're witnessing that disaster. If you haven't done so already, go look at the pictures. Look at the pictures of Ferguson last night. Look at the deployment of tear gas. Look at the peaceful protesters. Look at the police who allegedly are there to protect the public, there with their weapons pointed at the public. The pictures speak 1,000 words. They tell you what America has become. And I'm not sure it's resolvable because it's now becoming us against them and their arm to the hilt. And if we carry a weapon to protect ourselves, we will lose our freedoms. Journalists who witnessed the events included the Associated Press photographers and others. And earlier, Wesley Lurie of the Washington Post and Ryan Riley of the Huffington Post said they were not only handcuffed by police, that they were badgered by them, that they were actually abused by them. They were put into a police van after officers came in to quickly clear a fast food restaurant where they were doing some work. So the us against them mentality is that the police moved into a McDonald's restaurant. That's where they were going to set up their headquarters. And as they were planning their continued assault on the people of Ferguson, there were two members of the press there. They arrested both of them. They didn't just arrest them. They berated them and they assaulted them. Are you getting the picture, America? Returning to the story, and it's essential that America stop reviewing this story. Stop considering this story as a racial incident. That is not the basis of this. The basis of this story, the concern over this story, the attitude that's important to understand in this story is that America evermore is turning into a police state. And the civilian population is now the enemy combatant. And we're going to dwell on this for at least the next half an hour of this program. It's essential that you recognize what has happened. It became obvious when the NSA was empowered by three administrations in a row to spy on Americans because Americans are the enemy. And then when Snowden disclosed the fact that America was spying on Americans, then Snowden was labeled a traitor. Well, he was trying to protect you and me, which means that the government views information that is disclosed to those it is spying upon, you and me, as the enemy. Now, I'm going to share a little more of this, and I'm going to have Scott share from another story, the story that was actually published by Ryan Riley. Ryan Riley is about as lily-white a name as you're going to have. He's an Irish boy. I mean, I guess he could have been more Irish if it had been Ryan O'Reilly, but Ryan Riley.
No, it's actually a story by somebody, another guy, different person, but it's using Ryan Riley quotes and things like that.
Okay. Then you have Wesley Lurie. Lurie and Wesley are both English names, but if you look at Wesley's picture, he's kind of a mutt like I am. I use mutt in an affectionate way. He's a handsome young man, but there'd be no way that if you were to guess what his ethnicity is, we'd all probably be wrong. And I say that because these are the guys that were arrested. These are the guys that were handcuffed and put into a police van after the officers wanted to clear the fast food restaurant where they were doing some work, as if the fast food restaurant belonged to them and that the press was the enemy. The Washington Post reported that Lowry said that he was slammed against a soda machine. And then those plastic wrists, those plastic ties, which really bite into you, cuffs were put on his wrists. For what crime? For being in a fast food restaurant as a reporter? What do you think, that his laptop was a bomb? Riley told MSNBC that an officer slammed his head against the glass deliberately on the way out of the restaurant while he was handcuffed, and then sarcastically, "Oh, I'm so sorry that I slammed your head into that glass. Oh, silly me." The reporters were subsequently released without any charges. Martin Barron, the Washington Post executive director, issued a statement saying there was absolutely no justification for Lowry's arrest, and said that the organization was appalled by the officer's conduct. Ryan Grimm, a Washington, D.C. bureau chief for the Huffington Post, said in a statement that compared to some others who have been in contact with the police department, they came out relatively unscathed, but that in no way excuses the false arrest or the militant aggression by the police towards these journalists. Scott, you found a Huffington Post article on this.
It's from that same statement that you had right there by Ryan. It's by Ryan Grimm. After it goes, the militant aggression towards these journalists. It continues on. Ryan, who has reported multiple times from Guantanamo Bay, said that the police resembled soldiers more than officers and treated those inside the McDonald's as enemy combatants.
Read that again.
Ryan, who has reported multiple times from Guantanamo Bay, said that the police resembled soldiers more than officers and treated those inside the McDonald's as enemy combatants.
Read that again. I just want this to sink into America. I want this to sink in that this is the journalist who was an eyewitness to the police. Now, this is days after they killed an innocent, unarmed young man, and now they're spewing tear gas into civilians. They're armed to the hilt, and this is what they did to a journalist inside of a McDonald's restaurant. It's important that America understand these words. They need to sink in.
And it's these same police officers. It's the same group of police that have done all these things.
Correct.
Ryan said the police resembled soldiers more than officers and treated those inside the McDonald's as enemy combatants.
Folks, this is what we've been saying.
You're dealing with soldiers.
Over and over and over again. I know that in America there has been decades of indoctrination that tells us to trust the police officer. No, don't. They're acting more like soldiers, and the people they're supposed to protect are now enemy combatants. The police have said that Brown was shot after an officer encountered him. The officer actually assaulted him. But police have said that Brown, who is now dead, charming young man, a gentle giant by all accounts. I think he was like 6'4", handsome kid. He was shot after the officer encountered him and another man on the street. They say that one of the men pushed the officer into his squad car, then physically assaulted him in the vehicle and struggled with the officer over the officer's weapon. At least one shot was fired inside the car. The struggle then spilled out onto the street, where Brown was shot multiple times. I think 8. In their initial news conference about the shooting, police didn't specify whether Brown was the person who scuffled with the officer in the car, and have refused to clarify their account. Now, I want to tell you something. I don't think any of what they just said is true, by the way. But, you know, if it's two civilians, that are out there and they have a scuffle, and one says, you know, I was acting in self-defense, and the other says, no, I was, the other perspective is that, no, that the guy with the gun was the aggressor all along. Then the fact that they're both private individuals entitles them to keep their yap shut. They don't have to say anything. But when the killer in this case is a representative of the government, when the killer's weapon in this case is one provided by the government, I don't have that prerogative. At that point, there is no justification for not clarifying the account. They work for the government. They are police officers. They're part of the justice system.
To take that one step further, how does the government have money to provide these things?
Yeah, but it's the people. They forcefully take it for the people, and the reason that they have police and a judicial system is if you don't want to supply them with money to act badly, they will incarcerate you, and they will take your money. The fullest account of Brown's death so far has come from Dorian Johnson. In fact, you could eliminate the so far. There will be no more comprehensive account than Dorian Johnson. He was walking home from a convenience store with Brown. They were buddies. They were approached by an officer in a squad car using expletives. He ordered them to move to the sidewalk. This is exactly like what happened in Tucson with the professor and the cop that demanded that she show him her ID. And she said, no, you have no right to ask me that. Leave me alone. I said, oh, the law says I can demand your ID. Show it to me. She said, no. Well, here's an officer using foul language, threatening language, ordered two kids, two young men, just taking a walk from a convenience store, having a good time, laughing, and he ordered them to move to the sidewalk so that he can interrogate them. What, are we living in a Gestapo state that people have no rights, that the police can interfere with them at any time? You know, the woman in Arizona, the very articulate professor, she's indicted now for resisting arrest. But if the question is, if resisting arrest is a crime, then you need to have established a reason for the arrest. I mean, can't you resist that which is meritless? Evidently not.
That means every day I'm walking around, I'm resisting arrest. Every day I go anywhere, I'm resisting arrest at any time.
Yeah. At any time that a cop walks up to you and wishes to handcuff you, wishes to push your head against a soda machine or against a glass window wall, or push your head into the dirt, put his knee into your back, tighten your hands behind your back with a plastic handcuff, those really biting twist ties.
Zip ties.
That if you in any way resist his aggressiveness, unjustified aggression towards you, you're committing a crime, and he's not. That's where we are today. So anyway, he said he was walking down the street with Dorian Johnson. They had just come from a convenience store when a officer in a squad car approached and using foul language ordered them to the sidewalk. And hours after the shooting, Johnson told news crews that he and Brown had kept walking, as I would have done, and explained to the officer that they were near their destination. You know, we're going home. The officer then reversed his car to the point that he almost ran into us, according to the only credible eyewitness, Dorian Johnson, who, this is his story immediately after this occurred. Almost hit us. The officer, Johnson said, tried to open his door, but he was so close to the two of them that it ricocheted back on him. So here he is. He backs up. He almost hits the two people because they aren't going to comply with his orders to be interrogated. And he's using foul, threatening language anyway. I'm not going to respond to that either. And so he drives his car backwards towards them, almost hits them. He's so close to them that he opens his door against them aggressively. And because the door hits the men, it ricochets back on him, gets him all pissed off. That's why he fell back in the car. His own action of aggressively opening the door into them bounced back and knocked him into the car. Johnson said the officer then reached through the window and grabbed my friend by the neck. He tried to pull him into the car. The officer then reportedly pulled out his weapon and said, "I'll shoot you. I'm going to shoot you," Johnson said. Then the officer opened fire. Brown was hit and started to bleed, Johnson said. Johnson then ran to hide behind the car. Brown kept running, and he told me to keep running because he feared for me too, Johnson said. Johnson said the officer pursued his friend Brown with his weapon drawn, and he fired again at a man running away from him. Then Brown felt that shot. When he felt that shot, he turned around and he put his hands in the air and he got down on the ground. But according to Johnson, the only credible eyewitness at the scene, the officer kept firing and firing and firing. And my friend died. He didn't say anything to him. He just stood over him and kept shooting. And yet the police chief doesn't want to release the name of this officer.
Killer.
Killer. Murderer. And instead of doing that, they sit on their armored personnel carriers, high-powered weapons, pointed at the very people they abused, the citizens of that community outside of St. Louis, and fire tear gas into them. And then when they want to commandeer a McDonald's restaurant, they arrest and abuse members of the press. They're acting like soldiers, and that civilians are enemy combatants. This is what's happened to America.
I feel like you could, if I told you this, the scene you just described is something that I feel like, I don't feel like that's something that should be here.
Ever.
I feel like it's not something that should be here ever. And it's just...
There's no racial overtones to this, by the way.
You just described like stories that I expect you to talk about, you know, some Islam group is, you know, is executing people.
And right.
That's what you just described.
Right.
But that's right here. It's in Missouri.
Heartland of America. Man, it doesn't get any more heartland than St. Louis. St. Louis and the state of Missouri. Excuse my play of the name of Missouri. My father came from the state of Missouri and constantly called it the state of misery.
Well, it's the show me state. And right now
we're being shown, aren't we?
We're being shown everything that we need to know about how we're...
Yeah, there is no more heartland of America than this. And look what we're witnessing.
Do you want people that... I expect the soldier's first reaction to be point a gun. It's just my idea of what a soldier... Because a soldier's right. In hostile territories, things like that. I don't want cops to be soldiers. No. I want them to be cops. I want them to have the ability to talk with people and get them to do what they want.
Well, they become counterproductive.
very
they become
so.
Counterproductive.
Very much so, because think about all the first night they had the riots, and that's due to the actions of the police.
Right.
The police brought that on themselves.
Correct.
By not exercising good judgment. The kid's running away.
You know, the thing that you do in this case, when it's when you have an eyewitness says that he was witness to police brutality and a murder, is that officer doesn't go on administrative leave. The officer gets put in jail. He is indicted. That's what happens.
He
doesn't get convicted until there's a trial, but he gets put in jail and he gets indicted. Another witness, Philip Walker, told the Associated Press that he was on the porch of an apartment complex overlooking the scene when he saw the white officer with Brown, who was trying to give up in the sense of raising his arms, and he was in the process of being subdued. Walker said the officer then stood over him and shot him over and over again. Philip Walker is corroborating the concluding part of the story that Johnson has told. Now you have two witnesses, both of which are corroborating one another. The cop was a murderer. The Los Angeles Police Department is saying that an unarmed black man who died after being fatally shot by two officers attempted to take one of the officers' guns before a scuffle. Sound familiar? Details about the shooting of Ezell Ford, 25, whom relatives described as mentally impaired. I have a younger brother that's mentally handicapped. This is extraordinarily close to home for me. Began trickling out on Tuesday as developments revolving the fatal shooting of Michael Brown by police in Missouri continued to escalate. In the Los Angeles case, the police department said in a statement released Wednesday that two officers on gang details saw Ford walking along the sidewalk. These stories all start the same way. When they stopped and attempted to confront him, then he made suspicious movements and tried to hide his hands. Now, if your claim is that he was going for your gun, I tell you what, you put your hands in your pockets. You're not going for the officer's gun. He was unarmed. He was mentally handicapped. The police confronted him, as they do in a very aggressive way. Police, of course, are armed.
And there's two of them.
When there's two of them. When the officers got closer, the man grabbed one of the officers. You know, I've watched my brother respond to people who come up to him, and, you know, he doesn't have the mental capacity to kind of evaluate what's going on. And when somebody comes up to him, his sense of space in terms of what's appropriate and not appropriate to touch is just different. The mental processes are different. He touched one of the officers. Well, the officer took him to the ground. And Ford, according to the officers, tried to grab one of the officers' gun, according to the LAPD release. Both officers then fired at Ford. This mentally handicapped young man. The officers handcuffed the injured man and called for an ambulance, which transported him to a hospital, but he was pronounced dead on arrival. Others, however, described the scene in which a man known by the local police in the area to be mentally impaired presented no threat to the officers at all. One witness who identified himself to KTLA, KTLA is a local television provider in the Los Angeles County area, as a cousin of Ford, said that Ford was shot three times in the back as he lay on the ground. Ford's mother told KTLA that the police were aggressive when their son tried to ask what he had done. He said, even she found the police aggressive when she questioned them. She says, I got pushed to the ground in the process of trying to find out what was going on with my son. The man who identified himself as a witness told KTLA that the officers also pulled out billy clubs when Mrs. Ford approached them. Wow.
So, two cops in this story,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Same story.
Two cops mm-hmm. couldn't subdue
nope.
one guy.
One mentally handicapped kid that wasn't doing anything wrong.
Here's the other
that
thing.
Was unarmed and was doing nothing wrong, and they decided that they needed to confront him. What? For sport?
Here's the other thing is why is confrontation the first response?
Right.
Whatever happened to like if I go out with my friends to a bar and right. some guy wants to be a jerk to me, I don't just start punching him. I don't start hitting him or pushing him. I tell
why
him.
Is walking down the street? Why is walking on the sidewalk now reason for police to come up and question? If we have so many police that they're stopping people walking down the sidewalk, asking for their ID and questioning them and trying to arrest them, we got a real problem here.
I think another quote from that Huffington Post.
That was a killer.
I believe that helps sum it up. Police militarization has been among the most consequential and unnoticed developments of our time, and is now beginning to affect press freedom.
Stunning. The militarization of the police is one of the little most poorly known and yet most important issues of our time. Well, we've been trying to make it well known on this program because the issue is a threat to liberty.